Imagine a woman standing before this huge blank canvas. It's the early 20th century and the air smells of oil and turpentine. Outside, society is rearranging itself through industry and through war and through suffrage and science. Inside the studio, however, another revolution is underway. The woman closes her eyes. She's prayed. She's invoked the spirits. She's called upon presences that she names as guides, masters, and teachers. She doesn't believe the painting that she's about to create originates solely from her own mind. She believes that she's collaborating with something unseen. And then her hand begins to move. Before abstract art was sanctioned by museums and before critics would legitimize non-representational art, women across Europe and America were receiving messages and images in trance. They were receiving these images in meditation, and they were having visions. They didn't describe themselves primarily as these innovators of modernism. They described themselves as mediums. So today I'm going to be speaking to you about Hilma af Klint, Agnes Pelton, and Emma Kunz. But before I speak about them, I think it's important to discuss the impact of spiritualism, as I personally believe that 19th century spiritualism and these related esoteric movements created this cultural soil in which these women's visionary practices grew. So spiritualism is a formal movement that began in 1848 in Hydesville, New York. It began with the Fox sisters, who you probably have heard about for some time. And the Fox sisters, they claim to communicate with spirits through what's called rappings or table tapping, etc. Long story, we're not going to get into that today. But either way, this phenomena, it spread across the United States and Europe quite rapidly. Seances at the time became really fashionable. You saw them all the time in parlors. Mediums, you know, they claimed to channel the dead, automatic writing, trance speaking, table turning, and even spirit photography emerged during this time. So by the 1850s and 1860s, spiritualism was this transatlantic movement. Now, what made spiritualism really radical was that it democratized revelation. You didn't need a priest, right? You didn't need a bishop or some institutional authority. Ordinary people, especially women, could act as mediums. So in fact, many of the most famous mediums were women because trance states and receptivity were culturally coded as feminine. For women who were otherwise barred from intellectual and religious authority, spiritualism offered a sanctioned platform for speaking with power, and this is pretty critical. Spiritualism didn't just propose communication with the dead, it also, or the practice itself, it disrupted hierarchy. It suggested that truth could descend into a female body, in a parlor nonetheless, and it could bypass this patriarchal institutions, or these institutions entirely. So by the late 19th century, spiritualism intersected with other esoteric movements. The Theosophical Society, which was founded in 1875 by Helena Blavatsky and Henry Steele Alcott, it was founded in New York and it blended Eastern philosophy, Western occultism, reincarnation, karma, and the evolution of consciousness. Theosophy emphasized hidden masters. It emphasized subtle planes and symbolic cosmology. And it moved away from communicating with these deceased relatives and moving more towards communicating with higher intelligences that guided humanity's evolution. And this is where really Hilma af Klint and Agnes Pelton began to come in. So we'll talk about Hilma first. So Hilma was born in 1862, right after this aftermath of spiritualism's explosive growth. Sweden, because she was born in Sweden, Sweden had these active spiritual circles at the time. So Hilma was formally trained at the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Stockholm, and she was technically proficient, and she drew these naturalistic landscapes and botanical drawings during her studies. But Hilma also studied theosophy, and later she ends up studying what's called anthroposophy under Rudolf Steiner. In 1896, she ends up forming a group with four other women called The Five, and The Five would meet to hold these seances. They would practice automatic drawing as opposed to automatic writing during these seances. They also recorded messages from entities who identified themselves as what's called am allele. They also had messages from other spiritual intelligence during their seances. So through their trance states, they believed that these higher beings were instructing them in a visual language that would prepare humanity for some sort of new spiritual epic. Between 1906 and 1915, Hilma creates what's called the paintings for the temple. And so you see these spiral swans, radiant discs, coded letters, embryonic forms, vibrant color symmetries fill the canvases, sometimes over 10 feet tall. She was told, as she says, that these paintings were not meant for her contemporaries. These paintings were only meant to be seen by future people. She stipulated in her will that they not be shown publicly until at least 20 years after her death. And in reality, they remain largely unseen until the late 20th century, when the art world was slowly beginning to recognize that abstract art had been gestating, you know, over Europe, over the United States, and also gestating in these seance rooms guided by women who were conversing with spirits. So what fascinates me is not only that Hilma believed she was guided, right, but that the work itself carries this quality of instruction. There are diagrams of dualities merging, masculine and feminine forces intertwining, botanical growth patterns, like spiraling towards what we could maybe say is transcendence. These paintings feel less like self-expression and more like cosmology. They resemble esoteric charts that somebody might find in theosophical texts. And yes, indeed, Hilma was deeply influenced by theosophy. And as I said earlier, she ended up learning under Rudolf Steiner. And Steiner himself, he viewed her work and thought it was interesting. However, he did discourage her from exhibiting it widely. Maybe he sensed that the world wasn't ready for it, or I'm not really sure why, but he discouraged her. We need to ask the question here. What did Hilma think was happening? What did she believe was actually happening? Well, she left a lot of writings behind, and she did believe that consciousness was evolving. She also believed invisible intelligences were assisting humanity, and she also believed that art could function as a bridge between dimensions of awareness. Let's move on to Agnes Pelton. She was born in 1881, and she also worked within this lineage of spiritual abstraction, though her path was maybe a quieter one and a little bit more interior. She was raised partly in Europe and later in America, and Pelton was also influenced by theosophy and other ageless wisdom teachings that were circulating in metaphysical circles of the early 20th century. So she moved to Cathedral City in the California desert, where the landscape itself, it seemed kind of like this threshold between the worlds. In her small studio, she painted these luminous forms that were hovering in space. There were chalices of light, floating orbs, ascending flames, these soft gradients that were dissolving into radiant centers. Pelton wrote of her desire to depict what's called the inner life. She saw paintings as records of meditative states, and the desert became for her what the seance room was for Hilma. It was a place of transmission. So in letters and journals, Pelton described seeking attunement before she painted, or aligning herself with what she understood as higher vibration. The resulting work, such as the orbits or the fountains, they kind of evoke this architecture of light. They are ordered, they're symmetrical, they're serene, and sometimes when you look at them, they do feel like these visual mantras. So if Hilma's work is looked at as instructional and cosmic, Pelton's is a little bit more devotional and contemplative. Yet both women do share this conviction that art can be received rather than invented. Lastly, I wanted to speak to you about Emma Kunz. I think she's a really interesting person, and I'm excited to share her story with you. So she was born in 1892, and she's a Swiss healer. and she kind of complicates our category of artist that we're talking about today. So Kuntz never considered herself to be an artist. She was this naturopathic healer who used a pendulum to diagnose patients and to generate these vast geometric drawings on graph paper. These drawings, sometimes over a meter wide, they were created with colored pencil in these meticulous symmetrical forms. And she personally claimed that these were energetic diagrams corresponding to specific individuals or healing processes. So for Kuntz, geometry was medicine. She believed that certain shapes carried vibrational potency. Her drawings resemble mandalas, crystalline lattices. They even look like energetic blueprints. And the drawings that she created were not meant for the walls of any gallery. These were her tools. And what she would do is place her patients in proximity to specific drawings to facilitate healing for them. It was only decades later that the art world would recognize their aesthetic and their visionary significance. So when we stand really before her work today, we do see precision, we do see repetition, symmetry, even radial expansion. And we might be tempted to interpret them through these Jungian archetypes or sacred geometry traditions, yet for her, she saw these as this direct response to guidance that was accessed through dowsing, that she accessed through intuition. And she personally treated the pendulum as this communication device or this bridge between the conscious mind and these subtle information fields. So what unites these artists is not merely that they were spiritually inclined. It's that they understood art as some form of transmission. And it's really tempting to romanticize the idea of spirits dictating these masterpieces. It's equally tempting in these modern secular frameworks to dismiss these accounts as metaphors or even psychological projections. But I think the deeper question remains, regardless of your metaphysical stance, why do so many artists describe inspiration as arriving from beyond the conscious self? Plato spoke of divine mania, of madness sent by the gods that seizes poets. And in the Ion, he describes poets as rings magnetized by the muse, transmitting energy through a chain. And in many indigenous traditions, songs and designs are received in dreams. If we look to Christian mysticism, Hildegard of Bingen, she described these luminous visions that she rendered into intricate cosmological illustrations in the 12th century. So this pattern that we're seeing is quite ancient. So perhaps what these women called spirits or guides or masters, their intelligences may be within this larger field of consciousness. So why would spirits, if they exist as these autonomous entities, want to work with us through art? One possibility, I think, is that art bypasses our defenses. A painting can encode concepts that are too subtle, even for, you know, for dogma. It can reawaken this recognition within the self. And if we look at Hilma's spirals, they speak to evolution and unity without requiring any form of theological agreement. If we look at Pelton's luminous centers in her artwork, they evoke this interior stillness, right, without prescribing any form of doctrine. Even if we look at Emma Kuntz's work, her geometries themselves, they hint at this harmonic order without demanding, again, specific beliefs. And I think right now we can all agree that art can carry frequency. So when we speak of encoded messages, we might consider symbolism as a language that's older than our current alphabet, of course. Spirals, they represent growth and return. Circles always, I think, evoke a sense of wholeness. Interlacing forms, they can suggest the union of opposites. And color itself, it carries psychological and perhaps energetic resonance. The artists that we're discussing today, they were immersed in these esoteric systems that treated symbols as being operative rather than just these decorative things, right? And they believed that form itself shapes consciousness. So if we look at theosophical literature, particularly in the writings of Helena Blavatsky and later Annie Besant, and then also C.W. Leadbetter, there is a discussion of thought forms. So again, these are the writings that these artists, well, at least for sure, Hilma of Klint would have been reading. So let's go back to thought forms, because it's pretty prevalent in their work. So thought forms are these shapes generated by emotion and intention in subtle planes. Besant and Leadbetter, they even published these illustrated depictions, you know, of thought forms back in 1901. And when we look at Hilma's early abstractions, it's difficult not to see resonance with this idea that invisible energies have form. So maybe the message that's encoded in this art is evolutionary. And maybe it's saying that you're more than this physical matter, that you're embedded in this multidimensional cosmos, and that your psyche isn't isolated. It participates in these currents. But I think here is the deeper and more personal question, especially for you guys who want to create. Why you? You know, why would an intelligence, this inner or outer, choose a human being as a collaborator? I think it's because embodiment matters. A spirit, however we want to define it, it doesn't have hands, right? It doesn't have this pigment. It doesn't live within these historical constraints. It requires a nervous system to translate these impulses directly into matter. And in this sense, we can look at the artist as some sort of threshold. So this particular type of collaboration is about partnership. So Hilma of Klint, she didn't relinquish her discipline. It's important to mention that she trained quite rigorously, with her art, right? She prepared her canvases. She studied geometry, right? She experimented with scale. You see that in her art. Agnes Pelton, she cultivated solitude, right? And constant, consistent, disciplined spiritual practice. Emma Kunz, she practiced healing arts and even precise draftsmanship, which you really can see in her work. All of this to say is that the vessel themselves, Hilma the vessel, Agnes the vessel, Emma the vessel, they had to be prepared. So what if creativity itself is evidence that consciousness seeks expression beyond individual survival? What if the impulse to create beauty, pattern, and meaning is participation in some sort of larger unfolding? Whether, you know, we frame that as, or frame that unfolding as divine or collective unconsciousness or, you know, the quantum field, the effect is quite similar. The human being becomes this conduit for something that exceeds the ego. And there's humility in that, but there's also responsibility. So encoded within these works, you know, may be these reminders of balance, unity, evolution, and healing. And they may even function as these visual forms of initiations. When people encounter Hilma's work, especially the 10 largest with these swirling botanical forms and these radiant color gradations, many people report feeling as if they are inside some sort of living organism. Because if you look at it, the paintings aren't static. They seem to kind of vibrate. If we go back to Agnes Pelton, her desert luminosities, they kind of draw the gaze inward. And if we go to Emma Kunz's work, her diagrams, they compel this contemplation of symmetry and proportion. All in all, we personally are changed just by looking. And maybe that's the ultimate purpose. Spirits, spirit guides, higher consciousness, whatever language that we're going to choose here, isn't going to be interested so much in spectacle. Maybe they're interested in awakening your perception. Art itself has the power to soften your own rigid worldviews, and hopefully it can invite a sense of wonder about life itself and consciousness in place of the certainty that we think we hold at this time. In today's world, I think we are increasingly reducing reality to measurable data, but these women and their work, it reminds us that mystery has always been the co-creator of life, of culture. So for people who feel called to create, I think we all do, the question isn't whether you have to believe in spirits, right? The question is whether you're willing to listen deeply enough to discover what wants to move through you. But that listening, it's always going to require stillness, right? It also requires your courage and sense of discernment, because not every impulse is sacred and not every vision that you have is going to be benevolent. But disciplined receptivity, it can transform art from, you know, really into a form of service. And perhaps the spirits, if they're there, maybe they seek collaboration, because human beings, they stand at the intersection of matter and meaning. And also, we are the hinge between the visible and the invisible. So when we paint, when we write, when we sing, or draw from that liminal space as we do, we participate in this ancient exchange. Hilma of Klint once wrote that she was merely executing a commission that was given by higher powers. That's what her art is to her. Agnes Pelton described her work as, quote, painting pictures for God. Emma Kunz insisted that her drawings were instruments for healing. So each in their own language, they suggested that art can be a sacrament. And maybe that's the encoded message that's quietly running beneath their canvases. That creation itself is this sacred collaboration, and that consciousness extends beyond the personal, and that when we dare to become these instruments of something larger, the world receives images it didn't know that it needed. So if spirits desire to work through us, it might be because we're the only beings here who can transform the invisible insight into visible form. We are the bridge, and potentially maybe the art itself is the crossing. Everyone, I hope this was helpful for you today, at least moderately interesting. Please, as always, take care of yourselves, and I look forward to connecting with you next week.